Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 595, titled European Vacation. This is being recorded on April 22nd of the year 2007. Now, what the title of the program refers to, it's as is often the case, one of my favorite sayings, it was by the philosopher Nietzsche, who observed that, quote, "A joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling." And I found that to be the case. And the title basically alludes to the fact that what we're going to be doing is taking a look at a lot of various aspects of European fascism and neo-fascism. And generally a lot of really foul things going on in Europe right now. Often Americans, with some degree of validity, I think, view Europe is sort of idyllic, certainly in with regard to the so-called social safety net. It certainly is, and in certain other respects as well. But there are a lot of real interesting things going on in Europe as well. In our last broadcast, in 3 days of the Falcon Part 2, we were taking a look at some elements of a global network, of which the elements that executed September 11th were part. And just as part of that network is Russian and Eastern European criminal and Russian and Eastern European intelligence agents. And just as part of it is Islamist and Islamo-fascist. It has strong links to elements within the Bush administration, going to the highest links of the GOP. And yet some of these same elements also have very, very strong links to Italian fascism. The Italian fascism descended from Mussolini's fascisti. The Italian fascism present within the administration of Silvio Berlusconi, himself an ex-P2 Lodge member, and the Italian fascism, which in turn is one of two Janus faces manifested by this global network. We're going to be taking a look at something which for veteran listeners will be, you know, old home week, I guess we could say. This concerns the creation of a parallel intelligence agency, basically what appears to be very much like the recreation of the Super Sees Me fascist intelligence subservice that we looked at in connection with the strategy of tension, with the shooting of the Pope, with the P2 Lodge, with all sorts of things in AFA programs 17 through 21 about the shooting of the Pope. The P2 Lodge could be, I think, accurately described as a crypto-fascist government, although ostensibly a Masonic lodge. It was actually a power base, a criminal base, and a crypto-fascist organization, primarily in Italy, but actually around the world as well, headed up by Mussolini regime veteran Licio Gelli. The P2 Lodge had profound connections within the Vatican, profound links within the Reagan administration and U.S. powers, corridors of power. And as I mentioned earlier, Italian PM Silvio Berlusconi was a member of the P2. One of the key elements in his administration was the Alleanza Nazionale of Gianfranco Fini. That is a successor organization to Mussolini's fascist organization, although it represents itself as post-fascist. And yet, they're the same elements also link up with the milieu of Bank al-Taqwa and the milieu of the Muslim Brotherhood and the milieu of the Islamic component within this fascist international that was behind September 11th. It's behind a whole lot of other things as well. We're going to take a look now at sort of the new Super Sees Me. This new Super Sees Me is called the DSSA. That stands for the Department of Anti-Terrorism and Strategic Studies. There has been some discussion of this organization in some of the blogs, but it tends to spin it as a sort of a neocon tool of the Mossad and or Israel lobby, and although it certainly does have some links to that P2 milieu, has some strong links to the Israeli right, as I've maintained, as I've pointed out in past broadcasts. One of the interesting things about the P2 milieu is that through the links of big money, through the corridors of Swiss banking, this milieu of P2 is very much linked to the Bank Altaqua. Youssef Nada's attorney, Pierluigi Barchi, is also the attorney who handled the Swiss investments for Silvio Berlusconi. And Pierluigi Barchi's attorney, his law partner, is Carla Del Ponte, the former Swiss justice minister, our equivalent of attorney general. Many other links as well. Alessandro Gay is one of the shareholders in the Bank Altaqua. He also was a member of Ordine Nuovo, an Italian fascist organization headed up by Pino Rauti, a veteran of the Salò Republic, the SS-sponsored Rump Republic in northern Italy that flourished in the end of World War, during the closing stages of World War II. Pino Rauti and his Ordine Nuovo, also part of the coalition along with Fini, in the Berlusconi government. So the return of the Super Sees Me, return of the son of Monster Magnet, as Monster Maggot actually is probably a better misstatement of that. This basically from July 1st of 2005. This is Italy probes parallel police. Italian police have launched a big inquiry into a parallel intelligence agency, say Italian news reports. The Department of Anti-Terrorism and Strategic Studies, or DSSA, was reportedly created after the 2004 Madrid bombings to combat Islamic extremism. Genoa-based investigators carrying out a probe into the DSSA have arrested two people and placed more than two dozen others under investigation. Anti-terror squads have also carried out raids in 9 Italian regions. Many of those under investigation are said to be employed by regular law enforcement bodies. Prosecutors believe that DSSA employees, unquote, were sometimes using police, official police badges and other equipment to carry out their own investigations. The alleged parallel force is also accused of illegally using the Interior Ministry database for its own purposes. The DSSA operated its own website, which was disabled after the arrests were reported on Friday morning. Reports say the site was available in 4 languages, Italian, English, French, and Spanish, and profiled terror organizations, as well as urging the public to come forward with information. Italian state radio RAI later reported that the two arrested men may have had links with Gladio, the Italian branch of a secret paramilitary network set up in post-war Europe with the backing of the CIA. There are also reports of a possible connection with a far-right political group. The investigation that uncovered the alleged parallel structure is an offspring of a previous inquiry into the death of Fabrizio Quattrocci, one of 4 Italians kidnapped in Iraq in April of 2004. Mr. Quattrocci was shot dead by the abductors while his colleagues were eventually released. Well, the Operation Gladio, the Super Sees Me, the crypto-fascist government and crypto-fascist structure that controlled and to a large extent continues to wield tremendous influence in post-World War II Italy is something we've covered in many programs. In the written description for this broadcast on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, there will be plenty of notations and links to some of the other programs that talk about this. Alrighty. Still more about the DSSA network and its links to Operation Gladio, the P2, and so forth. This from July 5th of 2007. This is from the London Independent. This particular story is by John Phillips in Rome. Headline, up to 200 Italian police, quote, ran parallel anti-terror force. And this basically reads as follows. Up to 200 police officers and former intelligence operatives are being investigated by Italian magistrates on charges of organizing an illegal parallel police force to combat terrorism. The shadowy group appears to have set itself up as a private security firm, offering protection to senior figures and illicitly using official police resources. Its leaders have been accused of, quote, usurping public functions and illegal use of classified data. Judge Francesco Lalla, Genoa's chief prosecutor, said the self-styled Department for Anti-Terrorist Strategic Studies, or DSSA, maintained an arsenal of weaponry stored by its accused commanders Gaetano Saia and Riccardo Sindaco, both with links to the Italian far right. The revelations have heightened many Italians' unease about the strategies of the government of Silvio Berlusconi, the prime minister, against Islamist terrorism. Judicial sources said that the DSSA recruited from police, paramilitary carabinieri, finance police, and the armed services, and presented itself to Italian institutions as well as potential recruits as an elite body specializing in fighting Islamic and Marxist terrorism. Mr. Saia, now under house arrest, had applied for 32 million euros in European finance and had allegedly sought contact with the Vatican to try to obtain a contract to protect Pope Benedict against terrorist attack. By the way, parenthetically, do check out AFA programs 17 through 21 available from Spitfire. Those are massive programs about the shooting of the Pope back in 1981. Very, very interesting story indeed, and you will get a chuckle about this. Continuing, magistrates focused on the DSSA after it allegedly claimed to have a video of the murder in Iraq of the Italian hostage Fabrizio Quattrocchi and tried to sell the footage. Investigators are trying to determine what official support the organization may have had. The Interior Minister Giuseppe Pisanu has suspended dozens of police officers who joined the network. But Carlo Tarmina, an MP from Mr. Berlusconi's Forza Italia party, insists DSSA was a bona fide security company with nothing to hide, and the high commands of the police and intelligence services were aware of its existence, unquote. Il Messaggero quoted an investigator who said it was particularly disturbing that phone intercepts suggested DSSA members had been planning to kidnap Cesare Battisti, a Red Brigade's activist living in exile in Paris. Quote, "We were seeing the genesis of something similar to the death squads in Argentina," unquote, the magistrate is reported to have said. The group was charged with making unauthorized use of Interior Ministry data bank information, as well as equipping cars with sirens and flashing lights and the official lollipop sticks used by Italian police to stop traffic or wave as they break traffic regulations. Gilberto Di Benedetto, an associate of Mr. Saia who acted as a middleman with the Vatican, said most members had joined the DSSA in good faith despite its farcical aspect. Quote, "They were people who were hoping for power or to become private investigators, but there were many police officers and sergeants who believed the DSSA would advance their careers," he said. La Repubblica newspaper quoted Michael Scheuer, a former CIA agent and head of the Bin Laden unit at CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, until last November, as saying the head of Italy's military intelligence agency, SISMI, had authorized the CIA to abduct Abu Omar, a militant Islamic cleric who was flown from Milan to Egypt and reportedly tortured. Mr. Berlusconi's government denies knowledge of the affair, which became public after Milan magistrates issued arrest warrants for 13 CIA agents. So this organization lies, in many ways, at the foundation of the inquiry into the indictment of those 13 CIA agents. But what we have not heard too much about was the fact that this is the return of the Super Seize Me. Do check the written description for this program. Check programs such as For the Record 455 and 456 for some of the links to between Italian fascism and the milieu of Bank al-Taqwa. Bear in mind that some of the bogus intelligence, some of the forged documents concerning the Niger Yellowcake situation, now, those documents appear to have come through the Seize Me. And now exactly who was zooming who remains to be determined. But bear in mind this Janus-faced organization, which bears the face of Italian fascism as it looks one way over the Alps. But as it looks towards the moneyed corridors of Swiss banking, it manifests the face of Islamic fascism, the Bank al-Taqwa, and the Muslim Brotherhood. And then, as it begins looking farther east, it takes on a Slavic character under the circumstances. We're going to continue with our European vacation, and we're going to leave sunny Italy, and we're going to go north to the vibrant, booming Federal Republic of Germany. This also is a BBC story. Many of you may have heard about this. While people were paying attention to Don Imus, a much more interesting, substantively interesting situation anyway, cropped up in Germany on April 14th of this year. The BBC published the following story, German Army in Racist Video Row. Basically, this article reads, the German Army has faced a series of scandals in recent years. A video aired on German TV has shown an army recruit on firing practice being ordered to pretend he was in New York's Bronx facing hostile African Americans. In this grainy 90-second video, the instructor tells the soldier to swear as he fires his gun. U.S. civil rights leader Al Sharpton said it was outrageous to depict blacks as target practice, unquote. New York officials say they are saddened and frustrated that the Bronx district is depicted so negatively. Quote, clearly these folks don't know anything about African Americans or the Bronx, said Bronx Borough President Adolfo Carrion Jr., who recently returned from a trip to Germany to promote tourism to the district. He has demanded an apology from the German military over the clip. During the film training session, an instructor tells the soldier, you're in the Bronx, a black van pulls up in front of you. And three African Americans get out and start really insulting your mother. Act! The soldier then fires his gun several times and shouts obscenities in English as the instructor encourages him to curse even louder. The clip was filmed in a forest in July of 2006 near the barracks of the northern German town of Rendsburg. The German army said it has been aware of the video since January and was investigating it. It is the latest in a series of scandals to hit the German military. A group of 18 army instructors are on trial in the country accused of abusing and humiliating recruits during training in 2004. Last year, German newspapers published images of German soldiers serving in Afghanistan posing with skulls. Well, there are a number of things that come to mind. First of all, it's very, very interesting indeed to see this. We've spoken in the past about the failure to denazify the institutions of German power structure in the post-World War II period. Not to say in any size, shape, form, or manner are most Germans Nazis, far from it. In fact, Germans who are sincerely anti-fascist, and there are many of them, are generally a little better at it than most Americans who profess the same outlook. But at the same time, in the post-World War II period, and in order to prosecute the Cold War, quite simply, the institutions of German power, the corporations, the major politicians, the intelligence services, the military, and the police, as well as many of the most of the judicial structure, remained in control of the people who had held that control of those institutions under Hitler. We've spoken about that in many broadcasts, AFA Program 37, and the For the Record series called Reunited Germany, the New Danger, go into that at considerable length. The first head of the German armed forces in the post-World War II period was a guy named Adolf Heusinger, who had basically held that position under Adolf Hitler. Much more recently, in the early 1990s, when Klaus Naumann, again the equivalent of the American chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was stepping down, in his farewell address to his staff, he said that basically now it was the mission of Germany and the German military to not only roll back the values of 1945, i.e. the results of World War II, but those of 1789, basically rolling back the French Revolution and the Enlightenment and the concept of liberté, Ecolite et fraternite. And so a very interesting farewell address indeed from the German equivalent of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Interesting also, one of the people who commented to me in emails about this article said, you know, with the United States being completely bankrupt and with already having had a number of foreign police and governmental agencies actively intervene in the wake of Katrina and the disaster in on the Gulf Coast, imagine something really horrendous happening and the U.S. being bankrupt and not being able to deal with some huge catastrophe. In the wake, I would note in that context, in the wake of September 11th, with large numbers of U.S. troops in Afghanistan and elsewhere, German pilots were flying AWACS planes off of U.S. coasts and patrolling off of U.S. coasts. So who knows, in the event of some god-awful disaster and a collapsed U.S. economy, maybe NATO troops could get called in. And who knows? Maybe some of the really whacked out, most paranoid theories of some of the militia crowd, many of those theories being really whacked out, but who knows? In the event of a truly bankrupt and disaster-stricken United States, who knows what might happen? Sometimes life imitates art, and in the following article, there's almost a Monty Python-esque tone to this, if it wasn't quite so tragic. In the series Middle East Matrix, dealing with some of the media coverage and distortion of the reality of the Lebanon War of the summer of 2006, we spoke in particular about some of the institutionalized bias in elements of the British press, such as the BBC, a laudable institution in many ways, but boy, they are stone nuts on the subject of Israel and the Middle East, and also have strong connections, not incidentally, to MI6. We also talked about some of the raw economics, some of the recycled oil wealth and the capital pull that that generates on the media market, and in particular, how the role of AP's Middle East serving for-profit entity basically has a tremendous, very vastly disproportionate influence on Middle East coverage, and since it's tailored to cater to people in the Middle East, that has a very obvious pro-Arab bias, simply being at fundament basically the economics of the marketplace. But any objectivity, and by the way, too, an awful lot of the coverage in of that war, as has been true of an awful lot of other events, was quite simply distorted. And in the series Middle East Matrix, I go into that at great length, and please do pursue in the descriptions for those shows some of the websites that go into some of the media distortion. One thing speaking of media distortion, an article from the Jerusalem Post, something that didn't get a whole lot of publicity in at least the mainstream American press. UK Reporters Union to boycott Israel. This is from April 14th of 2007. And again, this article almost is kind of Monty Python-esque. Britain's National Union of Journalists denounced Israel on Friday for its military adventures, unquote, in Gaza and Lebanon, calling on the government to impose sanctions and urge a boycott of Israeli goods. By a vote of 66 to 54, the annual delegates meeting of Britain's largest trade union for journalists called for a, quote, boycott of Israeli goods similar to those boycotts in the struggles against apartheid South Africa led by trade unions, and for the Trade Union Congress to demand sanctions to be imposed on Israel by the British government, unquote. Some of the union's 40,000 members decried its trendy lefty agenda. Other motions before the four-day meeting in Birmingham, which ends Sunday, included condemnations of the U.S. detention center in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and support for Venezuelan strongman Hugo Chavez. The boycott motion was the third clause of a larger anti-Israel resolution proposed by the union's South Yorkshire branch that condemned Israel's savage pre-planned attack on Lebanon, unquote, last summer, and the slaughter of civilians in Gaza, unquote, in recent years. Motion 38 also called for supporting the NGOs Jews for Justice, the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, and the Council for the Advancement of British-Arab Understanding. After an hour of debate, a motion to sever the boycott clause from the condemnation motion was adopted. The motion condemning Israel's savage, unquote, behavior toward Palestinian civilians in the wake of the defeat of its army, unquote, by Hezbollah, passed by a wide margin. Following two abortive hand counts, the boycott motion passed by 66 to 54. The Daily Telegraph's Washington correspondent Toby Harnden characterized the vote as, quote, inane, ineffectual, counterproductive, and insulting to the intelligence, unquote. Why should my dues be spent on anti-Israel posturing of which I and many other members want no part? Harnden wrote on his Telegraph blog, condemning the motion as tangentious and politically loaded propaganda that would be rightly edited out of any news story written in a newspaper that had any pretensions of fairness, unquote. Chris McGinty, a freelance journalist, and member of the Union of Journalists, asked on his blog how boycotting any nation's goods, whether it's Israel, China, or Oompa Loompa land, will help improve the lot of both staff and freelance journalists. Former Guardian reporter and Yahoo Europe news director Lloyd Shepard quipped that he now looked, quote, forward to similar boycotts of Saudi oil, abuse of women and human rights, Turkish desserts, limits to freedom of speech, and of course the immediate replacement of all stationery in the NUJ's offices which has been made or assembled in China, unquote. And here's where it gets Monty Python-esque. On the same day the National Union of Journalists condemned Israel, the organization's international affiliate, the International Federation of Journalists, called on the Palestinian Authority to secure the release of BBC correspondent Alan Johnson, who was kidnapped 5 weeks ago by Palestinian gunmen in Gaza. So almost Monty Python-esque. Although this has been a European vacation, we're going to end with a brief trip over to Iran on this little travelogue. We're going to conclude with an article from the New York Times of Thursday, April 19th of 2007. It's Dateline Tehran. It reads in part, Iran exonerates six who killed in Islam's name. The Iranian Supreme Court has overturned the murder convictions of six members of a prestigious state militia who killed five people they considered, quote, morally corrupt, unquote. The reversal in an infamous five-year-old case from Kerman in central Iran has produced anger and controversy, with lawyers calling it corrupt and newspapers giving it prominence. Quote, the psychological consequences of this case in the city have been great, and a lot of people have lost their confidence in the judicial system, unquote, Nimat Ahmadi, a lawyer associated with the case, said in a telephone interview. Three lower court rulings found all the men guilty of murder. Their cases had been appealed to the Supreme Court, which overturned the guilty verdicts. The latest decision made public this week reaffirms that reversal, skipping down. According to the Supreme Court's earlier decision, the killers, who are members of the Basiji force, spelled B-A-S-I-J-I, volunteer vigilantes favored by the country's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, and President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, considered their victims morally corrupt and, according to Islamic teachings and Iran's Islamic penal code, their blood could therefore be shed. And now here, note the source of this corruption. The last victims, for example, were a young couple engaged to be married who the killers claimed were walking together in public. Members of the Basiji force are known for attacking reformist politicians in pro-democracy meetings. President Ahmadinejad was a member of that force. And that wraps up our European vacation with a brief travel to sunny Iran to sample some of the quaint local customs that they have there. In any event, that concludes For the Record program number 595, European Vacation, being recorded on April 22nd of the year 2007. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.